Welcome into another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, and I am joined by my wonderful co-host, Jeff Cohen. We are super excited to be with everyone today. This is going to be a lot of fun. This is kind of the first taste of what our roundup is going to be like throughout this season, right? All four White Sox affiliates are now into their season. After Charlotte opened up a week and a half ago, the rest of the affiliates opened up this past weekend. So we are going to kind of focus on, you know, just going through level by level, talking about the top performers, who really stood out, who we kind of think is going to bounce back from a rough first weekend, right? Three games in. We're not putting too much stock into it, but we definitely want to highlight some of the strong performances in opening weekend for Double A, High A, and Single A. In addition to kind of talking a little bit about the Major League team briefly, you know, there was two 40-man DFAs and trades this week that we have to go through. In addition to, you know, the White Sox are rough right now, so we're going to mention it briefly, but we're really going to focus on all of these young prospects who we are so excited about, and a lot of which had a really awesome first weekend of the season. Some pitchers that had great starts to start their year, some hitters that have been mashing for their first few games, and just generally, you know, focusing on the future. That's what we do here at Future Sox, and we are excited to kind of give fans a perspective on some of the players that are on the way, especially while the White Sox are, you know, 1-8 right now. So we'll start with this. I want to go through kind of the standings, just talk about where our affiliates are at. Charlotte has started the season 2-7 after going 1-5 in the 6-game set against Norfolk Tides. Norfolk is one of the best minor league teams ever. I don't think that's an overstatement, actually. I think that's a pretty fair statement. Maybe the best AAA team that has been around in a while. They've got, you know, five top 100 prospects in addition to basically their entire lineup is future MLB level guys, which is pretty crazy. Baltimore has just stacked a ton of talent. So Charlotte had a rough week, but I don't want to beat on them too much because they were facing the best team in AAA by a mile. Birmingham, a 3-0 start, absolutely dominated the Chattanooga Lookouts this weekend in their 3-game opening series. Just really, really impressive stuff. That's going to be a lot of the guys we talk about are coming from the Birmingham Barons roster. Winston-Salem and Kannapolis both went 1-2 in their first series of the season, but some really interesting players and some you know, impressive games across both those levels at the lower levels. A lot of young guys that we're excited to talk about today as well. 1-2 for those teams, but I think we expect both those teams to continue to improve with some players on the way and some players improving internally. So a lot to look forward to at those three levels that kicked off this weekend. So first of all, that was a long intro, but how you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing all right. We've got our first full week of the season, and the Knights are out of town, but I'm looking forward to hopefully getting to Kannapolis and Winston-Salem this week. So that's very exciting.
We are super excited to see kind of you're here and see your thoughts in person at both those levels. Like I was saying, there's a lot to like there, and there's a lot of players that we're excited to talk about at that level. Takeaways, starting with the White Sox, we'll kind of work our way down the levels, right? Starting in Chicago, anything that really is worth talking about in your mind, Jeff, or you want to touch on briefly? We've got a few players that are worth talking about, but not a lot.
Well, you know, you certainly want to mention Garrett Crochet, two really impressive starts. And oh my gosh, you know, I don't know what to make of Robert and Eloy. I mean, right out of the gate, you know, they didn't even tease us this year, right out of the gate.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Starting with Crochet, right? I mean, Crochet has been excellent, right? Three starts now, only 4 runs allowed across 18 innings. Only 1 walk, too. That's what's crazy about Crochet is I think even when you saw him in 2022 be an elite reliever, right, there was always some command issues. He was always a little bit off on the spots. He was never a guy who was pinpointing. The dude is just hitting his spots every single at bat right now. It's pretty crazy to see. I mean, he gave up a homer in the last start, but it was like a weak little homer to left field, and it wasn't anything like he didn't miss terribly. You know, he just looks great, all things considered. The White Sox are a hard watch right now, but Garrett Crochet is certainly a good watch right now. He is just really, really fun to watch. I'm excited to see where kind of his season takes him. They just got to be careful with his innings, right? He came out after 5 this last start. He could have easily gone 6 or 7 based on his pitch count, but I think the decision to pull him after 5 was probably a smart one. You don't want to overexert his arm, but a lot of upside there. And then the injuries, you know, Luis Robert gave us a taste of him last year. So it was amazing to see him pretty much healthy for most of last season up until the end of the year and really just show everything that he can do. But at the same time, it's a guy who was injured a lot in the past few years prior to that. And then Eloy is someone who we're past the point of being able to say, you know, it's only a matter of time. It just, it just might not happen. I wish that wasn't the case, and he's a great dude. And I know for a fact, I don't like the dialogue around, you know, just the negativity about him as a in terms of his work ethic, because I know the guy works hard and I know he wants to be on the field. There's nothing he wants more than to be on the field. But it just, we're at the point where I don't know how much we can keep saying, you know, what if he's healthy?
Yeah. You know, Elijah, I think back to one of the first podcasts we did this year when you and I took a crack at predicting the 2026 lineup for the White Sox. And one thing we agreed on in spades is that Luis Robert was the center fielder at $20 million a year. He was going to be a bargain, you know, when we got to his option years. And I'm wondering if maybe that's not the case anymore. I mean, is this another case of Byron Buxton, right?
Yeah, I'm not there yet with him. I think because last year was so awesome, I can't quite say that I'm out on him yet. I think with Eloy, right, we haven't even seen that full season of great productivity since his rookie season, really, or his second season in 2019. But, you know, Luis, we just saw last year put together a superstar season, right? So it's tough. I don't know. You're not wrong. I think there's got to be some consideration, but considering the price he's at, even 100 games of Luis Roberts, you know, 2023 level of baseball is still worth that price tag, right? So it's, I think right now I still definitely have him on that 2026 and beyond roster, right? But you got to start thinking about things if the injuries keep piling up and depending on where the rest of this season goes with him. So I think that's it's an understandable concern.
Yeah.
And then one more thing we wanted to touch on a little bit before we dive into all of our impressive minor league performances. Baseball is in a weird spot, Jeff. I don't know kind of just what your head's at with this, but it's frustrating to me. And I'm not the person who's going to act like I'm a doctor and make assumptions on the pitch clock or any of these other things, because there's a lot of people jumping to massive conclusions this week. But, you know, Spencer Strider goes down with an elbow injury. Shane Bieber is having Tommy John. Yuri Perez, one of the top pitching young pitchers in the game, is having Tommy John now. Baseball's got its problem with pitchers right now in this elbow stuff. And there's, I don't know what the answer is, but what I do know is it's just simply sad to see so many of the top arms throughout Major League Baseball going down with Tommy John surgery and two Tommy John surgeries and multiple within a career, right? I mean, we've got guys in their mid to late 20s getting their second Tommy Johns already. So what do you think about just where baseball's at with pitchers' health right now?
Yeah, baseball is only as good as its individual stars. And, you know, yeah, you got some great hitters, but all your good pitchers, Gerrit Cole, you know, they're all headed to the disabled list. I did a lot of reading about it this week because, like you, like everybody else, I'm pretty concerned about it. You know, I saw Tyler Glasnow said he thought it was the banning of the sticky stuff. Someone else said, you know, they need to raise the stitching on the ball so the guys don't have to squeeze the ball so hard. The pitch clock, velocity, you know, max effort. I don't know, you know, and maybe it's a combination of all those factors, but I have to think baseball is going to act and act quickly to attack this, because we can't have another year like these last 2 years.
Yeah, it's hard to try and consider. I mean, ultimately, the way I look at it, I do really think more than any of these other circumstances that pitchers are just better. Like simply put, like pitching is just better than it's ever been, right? Velocity is higher, spin rates are higher, movement's higher, and the human arm is just not supposed to throw 100 miles an hour with 20 inches of induced vertical break, right? Like that's not normal, right? Like it's hard to kind of just say it that simplistically, but like guys were not throwing the way they're throwing right now, even 10, 15 years ago, right? Like we're at a new era of technology and training and all these different, you know, driveline and weighted balls and all these different programs that guys go through now where their arms just aren't built for it. And it's hard, but I don't know, what does Major League Baseball do? Like what is there to do from a league perspective that really changes this?
Well, you're right. I mean, you can raise the seams on the ball. You can bring back the tacky stuff. You can play with the pitch clock, and maybe that'll change things on the margin. I don't know what you do about the max effort and velocity issue. But I mean, baseball's got to come up with something, and I actually kind of think they will. I mean, I think the future of the game's at risk.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where it takes us. I don't know if there's a clear answer, but I know I just want to see pitchers be healthy, right? Like, the game is better with Spencer Strider and with Garrett Cole and with Shane Bieber and all these other guys. Like, that's just that's the simple fact of it, is it just sucks for baseball to be missing so many of the star pitchers throughout the league, right? And some of the young ones too. It's not just old guys this is happening to. This is Eury Pérez is 20 years old and was ready to kind of have his first full season of being a star pitcher, and now he's delayed a year and a half, right? So it's just, it's hard. It's frustrating, but there is hopefully better things on the way. Shifting gears a little here, we'll talk about the roster moves recently before we dive into all of our minor league players to highlight. With Mike Clevinger being signed and then Eloy going on the IL, Robbie Grossman being brought in on a major league, you know, brought up, added to the club and brought up to the major league team. Both Jose Rodriguez and Alex Spies were DFA'd and then traded for cash considerations this past week. Lenin Sosa and Robbie Grossman were both brought up to the bigs. And then just earlier today, Jared Schuster made his way to Chicago with John Brebbia going on the IL for 15 days. So a lot of roster moves. What was your initial thoughts? There was a lot of rough reactions online when Popeye Jose Rodriguez was originally designated for assignment. What was your thoughts on that one? And then we'll get into the rest of them.
Yeah, that one really caught me off guard until I took a look at the 40-man roster. And it's hard to believe with the White Sox as bad as they are that they actually have a 40-man roster crunch of sorts. But yeah, I'm afraid that he was a victim of the 40 man. And I, you know, I went to look at it again today thinking certainly there was somebody, but other than all these veteran relievers who are on the major league roster, there just aren't any relief pitchers hardly in the minor leagues that you can try and slip through waivers. I'm not sure what the answer is.
Yeah, it's a tricky spot. I was surprised by Rodriguez, but I also could understand it to a degree. I think that we haven't seen a lot of progress with his bat. I know the numbers still looked pretty good last year, but generally speaking, the approach was really poor at times last year in Birmingham. And he was someone who speed defense was there. I didn't think he was the first choice to get DFA'd, but am I shocked? Not necessarily. I think generally there is a lot of, I'm not sure it's good depth, but there is a lot of middle infielders in the system right now. There's a lot of so-so middle infielders right now on the 40-man. But at the same time, there is a lot of middle infield depth to a point where I don't really know if he had a role. I think the White Sox are happy rolling out Braden Shoemaker right now on the roster, on the major league roster, seeing what he has to provide. You know Colson's on the way, right? There's some confusion there. I don't think there wasn't a ton of options to DFA. I think that's really what it comes down to. There was some, but there wasn't a ton. I think I personally maybe would have gone for one of those veteran relievers, right? Like, I don't really see why Brian Shaw is on the 40-man or even Dominic Leone or some of these other guys. I mean, I don't really get that. I get you need to fill out a bullpen, but I'd almost rather just throw, you know, some of the younger guys in there and just see what happens, right? Bailey Horn, right? Like, sure, why not, right? I don't know. I mean, I see it. I understand it. I think it's fine. I think Alex Spies made more sense. That was kind of predictable in my opinion. I know this guy that people wanted to take a chance on as a reliever, but he didn't really perform that well into the spring, and he kind of had struggled so far. It didn't shock me, but I did. It is a little disappointing because Rodriguez is someone that we've had for a while. He's been kind of somewhat of a fan favorite in the minors for the last 2 years, and is someone that I hope he finds a role, because the dude can – he's athletic. He can run. He can field. He's got some tools for sure, but it's going to take some time for him.
And he's, of course, at that position that the White Sox just can't seem to fill, number one. Number two, clearly they, you know, prefer Sosa over Rodriguez, as I think we all do. And third thing is, I guess it caught us off guard because it's just not like the White Sox of old.
Right.
You know, they just hang on to these guys until they're absolutely certain they're not going to help.
That's a good point, too. That is a good point that it's not quite like the old philosophy. Ultimately, I think the roster decisions are fine. I think it doesn't really change all that much for the big league club. I think Lenin Sosa, I don't know where he gets playing time. I get calling him up, but I almost would have rather seen. I mean, I know they want to be patient with Colas. It became apparent that Colas, no matter how he does, is going to spend at least 2 months in Charlotte, I think, just to really get his footing there. But I don't know where Sosa plays. You've got Shoemaker and DeYoung and Nicky Lopez in like a three-way middle infield split right now. Sosa being the fourth guy at those two positions is like, where does he really play? Does he get some reps at third behind Moncada maybe? Does he DH sometimes with you know, Eloy out right now? I'm not sure I get where Sosa fits in the fold, but I also hope that he gets some at-bats. But it's just like, I don't know. I'm not sure if his development is really going to go anywhere with him playing twice a week.
Well, another problem though is that if you don't bring up Sosa, you either have to bring up Deloach or Colas,
Right.
I guess,
That's exactly right.
or maybe you bring up Stassi and you keep three catchers in Chicago.
Yeah, if Stassi gets off the IL, that could be what happens actually when Stassi gets off the IL. Maybe he comes back and is and then Corey Lee stays and Sosa goes down. That's a good point. That could be the option. I believe Stassi's eligible tomorrow, if not sooner, maybe. But yeah, I mean, it'll work out. It'll be interesting. Let's focus on the minors for now because I think both of us are way more excited about what we've got going in the affiliate teams than we are with the White Sox right now. Let's start in Charlotte. There's not a ton to talk about there, right? A rough week. Norfolk put up 26 runs in one game. They scored 10 runs in the first inning in the other game. The pitching was just pretty hard to watch for the most week in Charlotte. I know you watch a lot of the nights. Nick Nastrini is the one I want to mention first, right? A rough start in his first game with Charlotte this season, gave up 4 runs, was pulled after 3 innings. Again, it's a better lineup than he's going to face in some major league games. Like it's on par with some lineups that he's going to face with the White Sox potentially, right? So it was rough. It was not his best day. He couldn't find his spots for the most part. But at the same time, like I'm still frustrated by him not being on the roster for Chicago. I get the Clevinger signing, sure. Actually, no, I don't. I don't know why I'm saying I do. I can see why, but I don't agree with it. I don't see it. I think best case scenario with Clevinger is he has a good first half. You flip him for a low level prospect at the deadline. Cool. Would I rather have Nastrini on the 40-man at that point? Yeah. What do you think, Jeff, about Nastrini just sitting in Charlotte right now, kind of for the next?
I'm with you on that. And you have to think, he had such a great spring, and then they send him to Charlotte. I guess maybe it's no surprise that he wasn't really as locked in as he needed to be. He had to be so disheartened. It's frustrating, but I'm imagining he's first man up, right? When a pitcher goes down.
He should be, right? But then it's again, you're back in the same situation where what happens to the 40 man, right? Are you
Right.
DFAing a veteran reliever or are you there's nobody else to DFA in the minors right now. Like I really don't think there is. I think maybe you could say Josimar Cusin, who really hasn't put it together yet, but I still think there's some upside there. Maybe Bailey Horn, who they acquired this offseason, right? But beyond that, there's nobody else to DFA. I don't think you're DFAing Deloach. You just got him. You're not DFAing Colas, obviously, right? Like there's no minor league guys you can just that are an easy DFA anymore, right? So where does that line, my biggest question right now with the White Sox is when does that line get crossed of forget about the veterans. We are not going to win this year. Let's try to get some young guys on the field. I get why it's not right now. I know everybody's like some people would be happy if that was like today. They just cut 5 veterans and they brought up a bunch of guys. That's not going to happen right away. But when does that happen? The team's 1-8. I don't think it's getting any better. You already have your 2 best hitters on the IL, right? Like there's no clear path to this team being at all decent right now. So when does that line just get crossed where you say, okay, veteran relievers, DFA, 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 Nick Nastrini, go. Jonathan Cannon, go. Even Drew Thorpe, go, right? Eventually Colson Montgomery, Brian Ramos, go. Like, when does that happen? I don't know when it happens, but that's what we're going to be watching. Until that happens, right? Like this 40-man situation is going to be really, really confusing because there's not any clear minor league DFA candidates.
Right. They've really sort of painted themselves into a bit of a corner with the 40-man roster because, yeah, maybe Nastrini is the first guy to go up or if they need a reliever, Bailey Horn is on the 40-man, so he goes up. But after that, I'm not really sure because you've got Cousine, you've got Jake Eater, you've got Iriarte. And that's so you're right. I mean, if they need someone sooner than later, then it becomes a really interesting decision. You're right. If they don't have to make these big decisions until July, it becomes very easy. We'll know out
Right.
of Eater and Iriarte and all the Drew Thorpe which one's ready.
Yeah, and then maybe when Clevinger comes up to the bigs, then instead of just optioning someone, you DFA one of those veterans, right? Maybe that's the option there where you open a spot by doing that because I think when Clevinger comes up, obviously you have to drop a pitcher, right? So what is that? Which of the veteran, maybe one of the veteran relievers just gets DFA'd at that point and then you have a spot open for whoever needs to fill it, right? There's a lot of it's a weird situation with the 40 man right now. So I get when you really look at it and you think about it, it makes you understand why Popeye was the DFA because there really wasn't any other options, right? Like I think Horn is the one guy you could really look at and say, okay, maybe, but or Cousine maybe, but like it's a rough 40-man situation. That's why Nastrini is still getting blocked, but it does frustrate me because I want to see Nastrini in the bigs, and he deserved it after the spring that he had, right? It's tricky. Beyond that, in Charlotte, right, I mentioned Oscar Colas. Really solid start. Looks pretty comfortable. You know, 3 walks, only 4 strikeouts, right? That's the biggest thing I'm watching with him is, this is approach improved. And like it was in the spring, it looks better right now. So that's exciting. You know, 875 OPS from Colas. Looks like a professional hitter in Charlotte right now, which for times last year, he didn't. And then the other guy we obviously want to talk about is Colson, right? Colson, not amazing. He's striking out more than you'd like, which for him is different because he's usually, you know, really patient at the plate. But at the same time, showing some signs, showing some solid signs. I think there's some things that we've liked from Colson. He had a 3-hit game the other day. He looked comfortable. He's driving some line drives. What are your thoughts on Colson's first, you know, week and a half in Charlotte?
You know, it's so early, but clearly he had 2 3-hit games. So he's really starting to get settled in. You know, I think we're all wondering where the power is, and I have to think it'll come along pretty soon.
It's
what? 9 games into the season.
Yeah, exactly. He's played 8 games so far. I'm not super worried in any way about him. But he looks solid. He doesn't look great, but he doesn't look terrible. He's not like he's getting completely overpowered by AAA guys, right? Like he's having some solid at bats. He's had a few good games. Like I'm ready to see Colson over the next few months, and I'm very excited and confident that he will continue to improve. Is that all for Charlotte, Jeff? Do you have anybody else you want to point out? It wasn't a great week, obviously.
Yeah, a couple of quick things. First of all, Baroa, you know, we all have high hopes for him. And again, 9 games into the season, but he is off to a brutal start. And not only is he, you know, we know he has trouble with his control, but he's given up a lot of home runs. And a little surprising, to be honest. I thought he would do a little bit better in AAA.
Yeah,
and I did probably, too. And hopefully will.
Yeah, I think he will too, but it hasn't been great for him so far. Anybody else you got on the Charlotte roster to
mention?
Well,
the other thing is, I just wanted to get your thoughts on this. So right now in Charlotte, we've got Chucky Robinson and catching and splitting the duties with Adam Hackenberg, who actually is swinging a pretty nice bat. He looks pretty good. And because those two guys are getting all the reps at catcher, Carlos Perez has moved to first base. And, you know, that's fine, you know. They don't have a first baseman on the squad, so that's as good a move as any. But if Corey Lee comes back, if they don't keep 3 catchers in Chicago, I'm not sure what they do in Charlotte.
Yeah, I think I think it's about the same, right? I don't think it changes much. I don't know. I mean, maybe you – I think you can drop Hackenberg down, maybe. I think there's a world where Hackenberg gets released, to be honest. Maybe not. I mean, he's done some things, but I don't know if there's really much. Maybe Perez just gets cut loose, and then you have kind of Hackenberg and Hackenberg working at first a little. I'm not sure. Chucky Robinson could also just be – he's been good. He's been the best of the 3, Chucky Robinson. But at the same time, is he part of the future? Probably not. Is he, you know, the 4th catcher on the depth chart? I guess right now he probably is, but – I don't know. And then ultimately you got to factor in that Edgar Caro and Michael Turner are both going to be pushing for Charlotte, not maybe later this season or even definitely next season. Right. So I don't know. It's a lot of depth, but it's not, the majority of the catchers we're excited to watch are at the lower levels, right? At AA and lower. So all those guys in AAA, it's like, they're trying to fight for their careers, but none of them are necessarily pieces of the future in my mind.
Right. Yeah. I think the calculus changed once Cuero came into the system and we drafted the 2 young catchers, Turner and Harris. All of a sudden, we began to look at our other catchers with a little bit different perspective. You're right.
No, 100%. Let's shift gears to Birmingham, if that's good with you, because Birmingham is where we've got a lot of players that really had a great weekend. I mean, Birmingham, I went and saw the Barons play last year in person, right? And that team had a lot of talent, but it wasn't clicking. We're 1 weekend in, and that was some really impressive baseball. I don't want to overreact, right? Because it is 3 games, but like 3 just truly excellent games from the Birmingham squad to start the season, and a team that looks like it could be one of the better teams in AA and features a lot of guys who will be up sooner than later. Let's start with the starters, because all around just great pitching performances from everybody who pitched in that game. Started with Drew Thorpe, who got the opening day nod for the new franchise. You know, Thorpe's a guy that I don't see him spending all that long in Birmingham. I don't know if you even the tricky question is, do you even bother with pitching prospects in Charlotte because it's such a bandbox? But at the same time, like Thorpe was great. Five innings, eight strikeouts, only two hits and one walk, no runs allowed. Truly just an excellent first game of the season. The changeup was working. The sliders was working. He was locating. He was hitting his spots. He just looked all around really, really good. Thorpe is someone that, like we've talked about a little bit in the past, and I talked about this with Jack McMullen a lot when I had him on the podcast, you know, he might not be a top flight starter, but I'm pretty confident you could put Drew Thorpe in the major leagues later this season and he would at least be solid. He is going to be a major league starter, and he looked all the parts of a major league starter in his first game with Birmingham.
Yeah, it's hard to see a White Sox future without Drew Thorpe and Nick Mastrini. Yeah.
No, I completely agree. Yeah, he just looked really good. I think that's a guy who just is – the consistency is there. He did it all last season. He was just steady in the minor leagues with the Yankees, and is going to be a really big part of this team. And like we've talked about, like those back two rotation spots in Chicago that are Flexen and then going to be eventually Clevinger, right? Like that should be Nastrini and Thorpe later this season. Like I don't see why that wouldn't be. I get – not wanting to rush them, and I get the 40-man crunch and all those other factors, but like those two need to be in Chicago starting 2025. Like they are part of this rotation and could legitimately be strong starters. And Thorpe, great start to the season from him. I only see him continuing to do well. He's going to be the number one starter in Birmingham for now, and before you know it, he's going to make his way up the ranks.
Yep.
Jumping over to his counterpart in that Dylan Cease trade, who got the second start, you know, the 1-2 punch in this Birmingham rotation just got acquired by the organization less than a month ago, right? So they're new to the team, and they both jump in with no run appearances in their first games. Jairo Iriarte, not quite as magnificent as Thorpe, right? Four innings, four hits allowed, four strikeouts, two walks, and a hit batter. The command was a little less consistent. He had some moments where he was missing his spots, especially with the off speed. But Iriarte, another guy who he worked out of it, right? He let some runners on, but he got out of stuff. He flashed the stuff. It looked strong. The velo was there for him. Really just someone who I think, you know, is only going to keep getting better. He's still young too. Like Iriarte is 22 and a young 22 too. He just turned 22 a few months ago, right? So he's going to be 22 all season. I think he just spends the entire year in Birmingham and he continues to get better. He gives me the energy of Christian Mana last year, where Christian Mana, you know, was even a little younger than Iriarte, but Mana was just, you know, it was like, here, this guy's ready for Double A. He's going to be in Double A all season. He's going to do his thing. We're going to continue to hone in on that command. And if his command takes a step forward, then you're looking at him as a legit 2025 part of the rotation.
Yeah. And, you know, Elijah, some prospect evaluators rate him higher than Drew Thorpe.
Yeah, have you seen that a few places?
I have read it. That's yeah, sure. I can I'm trying that. To remember where I read it. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not a crazy take, right? The stuff is there. The stuff is definitely the stuff is legit. I think for him, it's going to be about the command. But, you know, his fastball had some nice run on it, which was cool to see because I know he has the velo, but he also has some really nice movement on the fastball, the arm side movement with it. And then the breaking ball is pretty nasty when he's locating it. And the changeup is continuing to get better for him as well. So Iriarte is a guy that could really take a step forward. And great to see him and Thorpe just start strong with the White Sox in their first games with the organization, you know.
Yeah, it's an exciting week. We got our first look at those guys. We're going to get our first look at the rest of the rotation. We're excited about all five of them. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. The next guy who, you know, made the third star right for Birmingham was Jake Eater. Jake Eater is someone that me and you have said this many, many times, right? Like, let's give him this season to see what he's got. Last year, I'm throwing it out the window for the most part. I don't want to put too much stock in it. He wasn't healthy for much of the season. He was getting his body back in shape. Eater looked pretty good. He wasn't great. You know, he dealt with some stuff. He gave up two runs, gave up six hits and across four innings, three strikeouts, two walks. Not an amazing start, but encouraging in comparison to last year, right? I think he looked a little bit more comfortable. And I think Eater is someone that I want to keep seeing him pitch, right? Like I just want to keep seeing him get innings and look healthy and see what happens.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and then piggybacking Jake Eater, this was interesting because kind of the listed fifth, I think he is the sixth starter. And when I did my Birmingham preview, I had him listed as the number six guy, but it seems like it could be a little bit of that Noah Schultz, Mason Adams from last year with Connor McCullough, who came in as kind of the relief piggyback off of Jake Eater in that game. And McCullough, four innings, five strikeouts, three hits, no runs, only one walk as well. McCullough is someone who, you know, he pitched in Kannapolis and was excellent, got up to Winston and struggled a little last year. But there's got to be something that even while he had a 5.33 ERA in Winston, there's got to be something that made the team say, hey, let's just put this guy straight to Birmingham, right? Yeah. So I saw it in Arizona. That was really fascinating. I was lucky to watch McCullough throw in a scrimmage game against the Dodgers. He was facing, you know, Will Smith, Miguel Rojas, a handful of Dodgers veteran players, and was really good in that scrimmage. And that was kind of my first time where I was like, huh, he didn't give up a run against a lot of big league players in like three innings work in that scrimmage game. And yes, it's a scrimmage, it's on the backfield, right? Like you don't want to put too much into that. But that was my moment a month ago where I was like, huh, I'm going to watch out for Connor McCullough a little bit. And then I see a week ago that he gets put on the Birmingham roster. And I was like, huh, I kind of expected him to be one of the top guys in Winston, but he's going to Birmingham, even though he doesn't have a starting spot there because the rotation's so stacked. It could be a piggyback thing where he's kind of that weekly piggyback off of Jake Eater, who's kind of getting his groove again. And McCullough looked excellent in his first game with Birmingham.
Yeah, I like the Mason Adams comp. You know, we've talked about how every time we went to see Noah Schultz, Mason Adams would impress as the piggyback guy.
Exactly. And then we're expecting this week, the next two starters should be Mason Adams and then Kai Bush in Birmingham. So that rotation is going to be a heck of a lot of fun, Jeff. I cannot wait to tune into more Barons games because every single day, one of those five starters is going to be fun to watch. Even if it ends up being McCullough that gets some starts, you know, that's really, really fun pitching there in Birmingham. And a lot of guys who we think can be part of the future here, right? Those are all five of those guys that are starting in the rotation are top 30 guys for us at Future Sox, right? So that's a fun rotation. Flipping over to the offense in Birmingham, right? Like we can't forget this team just put up, what is it? They put up 12 runs in their first game with a 12-0 run. They put up five in the second game, and they put up another eight in the third game of the weekend, right? So that's a 25 runs from the Barons in their first three games. And the leader of it is my guy, Wilfred Veras. Wilfred Veras is someone that I have had higher than the consensus for about a year now, really since I saw him. I guess not quite a year, but when I saw him in Birmingham last year in August, the guy can just hit. You know that. I know that. I think a lot of people know that. And the plate approach and the discipline with him is still a work in progress. But here we are, you know, three games into the season. He's 6-for-11 with two home runs, just driving the ball like crazy. It's powerful bat. It flies off the bat. It's a line drive swing. It's not like these home runs are long towering fly balls, right? Like he is driving the ball right now. So it's three games, but Wilfred Veras, and this is out of the 6 and 7 hole, right? Like this lineup is so deep that Veras has kind of been the six hitter, and he's got two home runs and six hits in the first three games.
Who are the 3, 4, 5 hitters for Birmingham?
So right now, it's funny enough, right, that you say that because Birmingham is running a lineup with the three guys that are kind of, I guess, maybe the biggest known names is Ramos at the 3, Edgar Caro at the 4, and Tim Elko at the 5, who none of them have had particularly strong starts in the first three games, yet this team scored 25 runs in large part because of the 1, the 2, and the 6, which is just, it goes to show how deep this lineup really is. And those other two guys that I want to mention, of course, are Terrell Tatum and Brooks Baldwin, two guys that are just look, you know, they've been great as well, I think, through their first few games. Let's pull this up right here. Terrell Tatum is, 4. This is what I love about Terrell Tatum, right? He's 4-for-8, so he's hitting .500. And then you're like, oh, where'd those rest of those at-bats go? 5 walks in 3 games. Terrell Tatum's eye is unbelievable. He still is going to strike out sometimes, but his walk rate is just ridiculous. And we saw it all last season. And then this year he comes out and he's got 4 singles. He's not going to be a huge power guy, right? But he's putting the ball in play, 4 singles to go along with 5 walks in 3 games so far.
Yeah, I think we talked about the fact that he was one of maybe only a half dozen minor leaguers all across the minor leagues to top 100 walks last year.
Yeah. Pretty impressive stuff. Tatum's eye is really special, and he's not the only guy in this lineup too. That's what's cool to mention is, like, you know, Edgar Caro, it hasn't shown yet on the stat sheet so far, but Edgar Caro, Michael Turner, those two both as the catching tandem, right? Those two are known for their eye. They both have excellent approach. And then you've got a guy like Brian Ramos even, who has really started to adjust his approach in the last year and is starting to become a guy that can walk more often, right? So this lineup is gonna get on base. It's gonna hit for power. You haven't got the power yet. You got one home run from him, I believe, but you haven't got fully the power yet from Edgar and Elko both had one home run each, but you're going to get more power from those guys. You're going to start to get just as much from Varus. You haven't gotten any sort of extra base hits from Brian Ramos yet, who's going to continue to mash. We know he's going to get going. It's three games, right? This lineup is awesome. And it's really going to be a fun team in Birmingham. The third guy I want to mention, especially behind, you know, Tatum in the one hole, who, like I said, has gotten on base nine times in three games. Varus in that, you know, that six hole right now. And then the two hole, I was pretty impressed. I was surprised, at least initially, to see that Brooks Baldwin slotted into the two hole, because you've got Jacob Burke on the roster. You've got guys like, you know, Michael Turner, Brian, like, you've still got Elko, who's bumped down to the five now, right? But in that two hole is Brooks Baldwin, the super utility guy. I posted something when I talked to Dan Elodi last week of the Cannonballers, right? Dan told me that Brooks Baldwin reminded him of Ben Zobrist. And that was my favorite comparison that Dan Helody made in that interview I did with him, because it's true. Baldwin is, he's not going to jump off the paper, right? The exit velos aren't incredibly high compared to like a guy like Varus or like, you know, Tim Elko, right? He doesn't have a ton of power. He's not crazy fast, but he does a little bit of everything. He gets some stolen bases. He hit a home run that was dead center this weekend, right? He can play all over the field. He's going to play a lot of shortstop just because this team doesn't really have a clear shortstop, right? So I think he's going to be kind of the starting shortstop in Birmingham, which is great, because if you can play shortstop, you can play anywhere else in the infield for the most part, right? And we know Baldwin can. We've seen him do that at past levels last year, right? So Baldwin, just another stat line for you, right? In his first three games of the season, 4-for-11 plus three walks, right? So he's been on base seven times. He had a homer. He's strung together. That equates to an 1136 OPS so far for Baldwin. So Varus, Tatum, and Baldwin all with OPSs over 1100 in their first three games. They were all on base at least six times in the first three games of the season. So that trio, and then when you've got Ramos and Caro and Elko still, it's a fun lineup.
You know, the series I would like to see is Birmingham versus Norfolk.
Yeah, honestly, right. Yeah. I mean, it's true. They might be a little behind the Norfolk tide. I don't think they're quite at Norfolk's level, but Birmingham, I mean, this team top to bottom, and that I didn't even mention, right? Like I mentioned him briefly, Jacob Burke too is a guy who's hitting eight in that lineup right now for the two games he played this week, and he's kind of rotating between center field, left field with Terrell Tatum. Is another guy who I think will get going, right? Like he didn't do much in these first few games, but I fully expect Jacob Burke to get some hits in the near future. So you've got a lineup that 1-9 is pretty strong and is going to be really fun to watch, in addition to the rotation we just said that's loaded. So great weekend for Birmingham. Definitely the highlight of the first week of minor league baseball for White Sox fans was just everybody in Birmingham. And like I said, that's with Brian Ramos doing very minimal at the plate. That's with Edgar Caro having a home run, but not much else beyond that. And in addition to Tim Elko, same thing, one home run, but not much else beyond that as well. So that lineup, we're going to keep watching. So far this week, it was the Varus, Tatum, and Brooks Baldwin show. Those three really performed, but still guys beyond those three that are going to be great in that lineup.
Yeah.
Shifting gears to Winston, I want to just let you start this one off. Noah Schultz, four innings, 10 strikeouts. Talk to me about Noah Schultz, Jeff.
And what, 54 pitches?
Yeah.
Four innings, 54 pitches. And I think 40 of them were strikes. It's just unheard of. excuse me. I'm excited about the dominance, but I'm also really excited about the 54 pitches in his first outing. So what's the next one? Like 65, then 75, and then he's off and running, right? You know, we might see 6-7 inning games from him sooner than later, which is what we really want to see. We want to see how he holds up over, you know, facing a lineup a second and third time, and does he tire, all the things that we look for in a starter.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was really impressive. I think he just looked incredible. The slider was sharp. The fastball touched 99 in that game with the ridiculous amount of break that it gets on it. I mean, that's not a 99 when it's that arm slot and it's that movement is coming in looking like it's 102 and it's moving, right? So it was just excellent stuff from Schultz. I really can't understate how impressive it was. And we know he's good, right? Like we all know Noah Schultz is great. And like you said, let's keep seeing it. We got four innings. Let's see five innings in a few weeks, right? I don't even know if they'll push it past four for his first few starts, right? But let's see a fifth inning eventually. Maybe he'll get a sixth inning in there, right?
Yep.
And next thing you know, he's in Birmingham, right? I mean, I get he's young and I get you're trying to manage his workload, but even if you're managing his workload, he can face hitters in Double A and still succeed. Like, he's that talented, right? So right. I do think we see him in Birmingham later this year, and I think he's going to continue to just show all the talent he's got, and it's really just going to be about keeping him healthy, keeping him on the mound. But an incredible first start, and obviously the highlight of the weekend for Winston-Salem from
Noah. Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of Winston, he's part of a pretty interesting rotation that kind of rivals the interest we have in the Birmingham rotation. You've got Juan Corella, you got McDougal, Peyton Paulette, and Schweitzer, and so. That'll be a fun rotation as well. And then, you know, we've got guys, you know, a ton of interesting guys in the field, including a number one draft pick last year, Jacob Gonzalez, and recently acquired Zavala.
Yeah, so I wanted to mention Samuel Zavala for sure, as he, you know, he had a really good first week with the team, 5-for-15 with a walk as well. He had his first home run. He had a triple, 1042 OPS through those first three games. So overall, Zavala, getting on base six times in your first three games of the organization, it's a pretty good way to acquaint yourself to the team, right? It was good stuff from him. I liked what I saw. He looks good. He looks like a player who's ready for that level of baseball and is someone that, you know, fans are excited to see what he can bring to the table, because obviously being part of that Dylan Cease trade, you're going to have some attention on you, and he handled it really well. He looked like a really solid player for the high A level. You got to remember, he's only 19 too, right? Like, this is a guy who's super young, and he's already looking comfortable in high A, right? So right. I can see a world that Zavala should be there most of the year, I think. I think he probably spends the majority of the season with Winston because he is so young. But would it shock me to get a late season call-up to Birmingham, assuming that, you know, a Jacob Berger or Terrell Tatum or Wilfred Barris makes their way up to Charlotte, right? There could be an outfield spot for Zavala there later in the season. So really, really great first start from him. Like you mentioned, some of the pitchers, not a great first start of the season from both Corella and Riley Gowans, who got the Friday and Sunday start on the opposite ends of Noah Schultz. Corella just couldn't locate. I'm really high on Juan Corella. I think he's going to really string some things together, but he just couldn't find his spots pretty much the entire game in that start, and it cost him. But both those guys were excited to see. Like you mentioned, Paulette is going to be throwing there. Tyler Schweitzer, just a fun rotation overall, just much like Birmingham there. So we're going to see those guys make their debuts this week. We're excited to see some of those other pitchers. Zavala was great. Mentioning Jacob Burke, top pick, Jacob Gonzalez. I was just talking about Jacob Burke before, but Jacob Gonzalez, a little bit of a rough week in his first few games with the team, right? He went 0-for-11, but he did have three walks. The approach is there. You know that's a guy who's going to walk, and you know he's going to look confident. It's only a matter of time. I think Jacob Burke will get going. We're excited to see kind of where it takes him. I think I'm excited for you to get to see him in person this week and see kind of how he looks at the plate. But he's someone that we still are watching carefully. Two of the other hitters worth mentioning, I think, at the Winston-Salem level, Wes Kath, former top pick of the White Sox, DJ Gladney, both had home runs in their first week. Those two are both guys with a lot of power. They just need some approach things, continuing to build some consistency, work on their bat-to-ball stuff. So those two, cool to see them go deep and show that power that we know they both have. And I'm excited to see kind of where things take the two of those guys as well.
Yeah, I'm with you on Juan Corella. Not worried at all. He was a stud last year. Yeah. Wes Kath, I guess it's a make or break year for him, right?
Yeah, I would say this is kind of the year for Kath to either take that step or to not, because, you know, he's been with the organization for a handful of years now. He really hasn't taken the huge step forward yet, but he looked solid in the first weekend. He's put together some good at-bats, so I'm excited to see how he kind of continues to progress at Winston this year. Winston, you know, they are going to be a fun team at 1-2, right? But I think we're going to see some more and more wins out of that squad.
Yeah, that's shifting. Of the three teams I'm going to get to watch this year, the Knights, Kannapolis, and Winston is definitely the one that is going to be the most fun.
Winston's going to be a very fun team to watch. But a lot of things to look forward to in Kannapolis, I think. That roster is – you can go – everybody should go listen to Dan Helody talk to me about Kannapolis because he did a great job giving some perspective on the team. The roster has a lot of names you will not recognize. It has a lot of names that are new to the organization or kind of are there temporarily probably because there is a handful of 2023 draft picks who are either injured or working through things in the Arizona Complex League, right? Eddie Park is hurt right now. Calvin Harris is hurt right now. George Walkow will be there eventually. There's a lot of players that will join that roster. But even with, you know, a lack of some players right now, pretty awesome first two starts of the season from two 2023 draft picks in Kannapolis. We'll start with Seth Keener. Seth Keener looked great. I didn't get to see much of that start, but I know I've talked to the guy. He's a super smart dude. You know, having pitched at Wake Forest, right, like his big focus this season is transitioning to being a starter. We know he can do well at that level of baseball, right? Like Kannapolis is probably a lower level of baseball than much of what he faced in college, right? So he's going to breeze through Kannapolis, I think. I hope you get to see him. I know you're mentioning maybe seeing him this week. I hope you get to see him before he's gone because I really don't think Keener lasts more than 2 months in Kannapolis, if that. I just think he's just going to be better. You know, 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, no runs, only 1 hit and 2 walks for Keener in his first game with the Cannonballers this year. He just looked excellent all around. What do you think about Keener?
Oh, yeah, that was a great stat line. And I think I mentioned off air that I'm hoping to catch him this week and then hopefully chat with him afterward. Looking forward to that. Sure.
Yeah, he looked awesome. And then the other guy that, you know, the top two in that rotation are going to be a pair of guys that were drafted together and have been working this offseason, both college experienced players. Right. So that second start was Lucas Gordon, who's another college guy that I think, you know, we're pretty high on. And I don't think he's kind of one of the more under the radar players from that draft class, but also turned in an excellent first start of the season. No hits actually for Gordon across 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, 2 walks. So truly five excellent innings from both Keener and Gordon. Gordon's someone that another guy who faced pitching, he faced hitters that are better than what he's facing in Kannapolis, right? So these two are going to start the year as the kind of head of this Kannapolis rotation. I expect them both to continue to perform, and I expect them both to be in Winston. The only issue is, right, Winston's also got all this talent we just talked about, right? So the pitching depth right now is really good, and that's a good problem to have. But sooner than later, you're going to have to find a way to get those two up to Winston this season, right? So whenever somebody in Winston proves they're ready to go up, it's all a chain reaction, right? So once Thorpe goes up from Birmingham, which is probably the first chain ball to drop, right? Then somebody from Winston probably, you know, not Noah Schultz yet. Maybe it's Paulette. Maybe it's Schweitzer. There's a handful of Corella if he turns it up, right? One of those guys can then go to Birmingham. And then from there, Keener can go up. Gordon would be the next one behind him probably. So those two, really encouraging sign from two of the recent draft pick pitchers for sure.
Yeah, Gordon pitches this week on Saturday. And I think we talked about Noah Schultz is going to pitch every Saturday this season. Right. So I've got a decision to make there, but we'll see.
Yeah,
can't go wrong.
Either way, it's fun to watch, right? You're seeing a new guy in the system who's a draft pick who had a great first start, or you're seeing Noah Schultz who's Noah Schultz, right? So either way, that is a good problem to have. Those two pitchers were really the highlight of the weekend in Kannapolis, but I want to mention a few hitters as well on that roster. Ronnie Hernandez, I made a tweet about him 2 days ago after one of his games, quietly becoming one of my favorite non-top 30 prospects in the organization, I think. We've talked about the catching depth, and he's that last chain of catching depth now of all these different catchers in the system that have big league potential. Hernandez with a great first week of the season. He went 4-for-10, 4 base hits, 2 walks as well in his first week with Kannapolis. He is going to be the catcher there, I think, pretty much all, if not most of the season. You know, that's a guy who's still incredibly young, coming off a year where he dominated in the Arizona Fall or the Arizona Complex League, right? You know, he made his professional debut last year at only 18 years old and had a 923 OPS in Arizona last year in the complex. And then this year at 19 is now the everyday or most days starting catcher for Kannapolis.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was part of that, what was supposed to be a phenomenal DSL class from 2 years ago. I think Chappelle, a couple other guys. He's the guy to keep an eye on for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Very excited to see what Ronnie Hernandez can do this season. He was the best hitter of that group in Canapolis, and a lineup that, like I said earlier, that lineup is missing some pieces. Like, there's going to be some serious talent added to that Canapolis lineup. When George Walkow gets there, he'll immediately slot into, you know, the 4 or 5 hole in that lineup. In addition to Eddie Park might go straight to Winston, but if not, he'll be in Canapolis for a little bit. Either way, there's a lot of talent that can join that lineup, and Hernandez is already, you know, one piece to definitely keep an eye on. The other guy, Riku Nishida, I know he's just going to become somebody that people just like love to watch, whether or not he succeeds or not. I think just such a fun player. He had a 5-for-5 game this weekend in Canapolis. Otherwise didn't do much the other two games, but 5-for-5 is pretty awesome. And he's just someone who I think it just plays baseball in such a fun way, and it's just so easy to root for. I think he's just going to become someone that people love to watch, and I hope he continues to succeed, right? Like, he's such a unique player in so many ways. What do you think about Nishida?
Well, you know, I would say this. If you're just a casual baseball fan, he is worth the price of admission. Go watch him bat 5 times, and you'll have terrific entertainment. Yeah. And I love to watch him, but Do you see a way where he advances? You think could his game play in Birmingham?
I can see that at that level, yeah. Because you got to remember, this is a guy who also played really hard competition, right? Like in a similar line of thought to Keener and Gordon, like I mentioned earlier, right? Nishida played top level D1 baseball, right? So he succeeded at it too. So it's not like he hasn't faced better pitching than this and done well, right? So I think he's a guy that I think can easily make it to Winston this season. I could see him even getting up to Birmingham and succeeding at that level by next year, right? He's definitely got the age on his side, right? Like, he has experience. He's going to continue to be solid at this level. I don't know what it looks like at AA or even when you get to AAA, right? Like, I think there's definitely the dude's 5'5", right? I mean, that's a little crazy. It happens. We've seen it. Jose Altuve is one of the best players in the major leagues, right? It's not impossible at all. But super unconventional swing, a lot of moving parts to it. It's gonna be an upward battle for him just generally in his career. But I think at the very least, I think he'll be in Winston this year, and I think he'll continue to perform in Canapolis while he's there. So for now, he'll remain the leadoff hitter there, and I think he'll be a good player for sure.
It's gonna be so fascinating to watch to see his progression. And also, I want to point out, you neglected to mention my guy, Ryan Burrows. He's got a broken hand, but you'll expect him back at the end of the month. And I think he'll be a fun addition to that team.
Yeah. Do you think Burrows could make his way to Winston fairly soon or not? Probably off the bat, he starts in Canapolis, right?
I would think Canapolis. Yeah. I mean, you know, the only thing, you're right. I mean, they did that with Chappelle. They went right from Arizona to Winston.
Yeah. No, I guess Burrows. Yeah. I forgot he didn't debut at all with Canapolis last year. So yeah, he will start with Canapolis. That's true. And he is another guy that will join that's going to be a pretty fun lineup, actually, when you add some pieces. Right now, it's definitely some question marks for sure. Some players that we're just kind of getting to know and need to take some time to learn a little bit more. But that will become a really fun lineup, actually, when you get some of those guys, Burrows, you know, Walkow, potentially Park, if he doesn't go straight to Winston. There's some intrigue there for sure. So Canapolis, you know, right now, it might be a lot of players that we aren't all that familiar with. But like I said, those top two starters are going to be a blast. They are going to continue to carve at that level. They've got some other starters we're excited to watch. Aldrin Batista was the other guy who threw for them and struggled this week a little bit. But I do really have a lot of hope for Aldrin Batista. His fastball's ticked up a little this offseason. So I think he's going to continue to perform there. And Canapolis is – there's going to be some serious intrigue there. While it might not be the same level of Birmingham and Winston right now, I think Canapolis has some talent to make it a really fun team to watch mid-season especially.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's all I've got for today, Jeff. You got any last thoughts? I know this was for those listening, this is going to be what we have. Hopefully we might go a little shorter in the future. This was a long one for sure. But, you know, we're going to talk just each level, talk about who's performing, who we want to see different things from, how guys are adjusting to the levels they're at, you know, and we're going to really just dive into it every week on the roundup.
Yeah, we got like I said, it's our first full week of minor league baseball. So there'll be a ton to talk about next week. 100%. And I hope to have eyes on a lot of these guys this week.
Definitely. Well, thank you, Jeff, as always. And that'll do it for this edition of the Roundup.
All right. See ya.